I've been working a lot over the last couple of weeks, as I'm sure a lot of you know if you're following me on social and staying in touch with a lot of these podcast episodes. I've been working a lot around helping organizations to reshape their kind of purpose and sustainability credentials, and at least explore some of the issues and challenges that go into marketing sustainability, particularly. And this kind of falls into a whole range of different categories. Opportunities and for a lot of organizations, big challenges where there's lots of unknowns. And having created what you might define as at least partially a purpose-driven, value-led business, and you sort of foresee this sustainable future in front of you over to the horizon. And then you're faced with the challenge of, okay, but this isn't business as usual. This isn't what we've normally expected or what we've normally encountered. So I thought I'd invite Ias onto the podcast this morning to have a short conversation, really, about how to scale a purpose-driven business. Now I'm going to really be sitting back and listening to this rather than trying to kind of guide the conversation, because Ias is an absolute specialist in this area. Yes, would you like to kind of give a little bit of an introduction as to kind of who you are and your experience of this kind of really fascinating area of actually how you scale a business that has decided or has actually been able to create a purpose at its heart?
Oh, first off, thanks, Neil, for inviting me on to have this conversation. And I hope we make it a conversation, because if you just hand the reins over to me completely and let me go for half an hour, I'll get bored first and then you'll all follow. So let's absolutely make it interactive. But yeah, my route into it, I suspect, is similar to a lot of people who are working in organizations that are driven by purpose and values, which is a personal one. I think it's hard, if not impossible, to lead a purpose or values-led company if you don't have values of your own and some sense of purpose, even if I think for a lot of people, clarity around personal purpose it's an eternal journey. I don't think we ever really fully get there. But certainly values, I think, are at its core, and there is that difference between values and purpose. I think both are essential. For me, the values did come very much from my own personal background, my family background. I am a Palestinian, and therefore, we as a people have suffered sort of quite badly in terms of our history and exile. And I was born in exile to a father who is very, very, very values driven. A father who was a lawman through and through. A father who he wrote or part wrote two constitutions. And so values were very much written to the core of everything that he did, and he brought us all up that way. And I don't in any sense want to take that as meaning as my mother didn't have a role to play in that. He chose wisely, and she chose wisely, so it came from family. And what it translated to, I won't go through the childhood, this isn't a psychotherapist's couch, but what it translated to by the time I got working was that I believed that certainly just in my everyday dealings at work, values were important. At that stage, it was more about values than it was about purpose. It was about how do we treat each other? What do we expect from each other? How do we respect each other? All of the values that make for successful working relationships. And my work trajectory had me setting up a business and technology consultancy, which I founded and took to around 40 odd people, around a sort of 3.5 to 4 million turnover at the time. And what I found was whenever we had challenges, whether they were people challenges or client challenges, leaning deep into the values really helped us to resolve those issues. I'd love to say we were really explicit about them at the time. We weren't. We kind of knew what they were implicitly. But whenever there was a difficult conversation to be had, invariably it turned into a values conversation. And what did we want the outcome to be? What would we be proud of the next day in terms of the decisions that we'd made? And that guided the decision-making process where those issues came up. So at the time, values were kind of there implicitly. But we were a business tech consultancy. That's what we did. We then, at that stage, I had significant investors in the company who were running a different kind of technology consultancy, but we were increasingly looking like we were going to end up competing with each other. And so we had a discussion that, you know, that was essentially going to be unhealthy. What are we going to do about that? Either, you know, we buy them out and we continue the company that we'd founded, or they buy us out and we join theirs. I was genuinely, open to both options. We ended up selling our shares to them. We got acquired and joined their company. And I joined their board to lead a turnaround because we had, it turns out, which I didn't know beforehand, that the organization was imploding. It had an employee churn rate of 40%, which in a professional services organization will take you under, because you can't recruiting to stand still. The costs of doing that would take you under. And so after I'd love to tell you it was a really strategic discussion. What it actually was me and one of the founders of the other organization in a pub, probably after two or three too many. We decided, or rather he suggested, why don't I take on the turnaround and see if we could pull ourselves out of where we were going. And I did. Essentially, long story short, I took that team of 60 people churning at 40% to a team of 200 churning at 6%. So we trebled in size, and we were losing half as many people out of a team of 200 as we were out of the team of 60. Reason I bring that up is essentially the only thing I did was to decide up front on some principles, some values, which I did in that instance articulate explicitly. And then crucially went on and implemented them because I think we've all seen, you know, the about us page with the values, the beautiful poster on the wall with the seascape and a dolphin fin and integrity and honesty and all those wonderful things that companies like to say about themselves. We all also know that for a lot of companies, it's as thin as the paper that makes the poster. It's something that sounds good, but has never actually been translated into the ethos of how the company actually works. And so for me in that turnaround, the critical thing was saying what I believed we should stand for, which I said at the outset when I took on the team, probably to a good amount of cynicism, because we all sort of love to make grandiose proclamations. But very, very, very quickly, that turned into an action plan where they saw that I was actually serious about the things that I'd said. And I think that brought a lot of loyalty back into the organization and a lot of belief in terms of the things that we stood for. And we became a destination employer. We got rid of all our recruiters because people were beating a path to our door. All the way along my work journey, what I'd found was... when you needed to do something of significance, of import, values mattered. And values made the difference. Now, am I one of these people who will say to you that, you know, if your company doesn't have a core set of values, it's never going to survive, it's going to go out of business? Well, no, I don't believe that either. I think there are organizations whose values are fairly rotten to the core or non-existent that have managed to make it commercially. One need only look at British American Tobacco. Did I mention a brand? One need only look at, you know, organizations that are selling death and destruction. And they're commercially very, very successful. So to me, in the end, it comes down to a choice. And if you are founding a company, if you are the founder of an organization, if you are the CEO of an organization, you have that choice. You need to decide, what kind of company do I want to build? Do I want to build one where values are important? Do I want to build one that is serving a grander purpose? Do I want to build one that's just making my wallet fatter? What is it that you actually want to do? It is a genuine choice. What you'll find is, although, you know, there's no, as I say, it's not a requirement. I think you can run a company that doesn't have a core set of good values. What you will find is increasingly, and thankfully in the world that we're living in, people are being drawn to companies that do have a core sense of purpose and good values. And what you'll find is that you will load the odds in your favor if you are embracing a genuine set of values, and genuine being the key word. If you're just embracing them because you think it'll commercially be good, that's a different thing. But if you're embracing them because you believe them to the core, ironically, you will find that probably you've increased the odds of success in your business. And business for me is an odds game. It is about probability. There is no guarantee of success. There are several guarantors of failure, but there is no guarantee of success. And all you're ever doing is loading the probabilities, loading the odds as much as you can in terms of doing the right things to make the company succeed. And one of those core factors is, what are we here to serve? What difference are we seeking to make? And what are the expectations that we should have of each other, of our clients, of our suppliers? What expectations should they have of us? How do we treat each other? Essentially, what are our values? And if you put those things together, you get to a place where I believe, you know, you haven't guaranteed success. You still need a good product. You still need a good business. You still need a good service. But you have increased the odds of both of succeeding, but most importantly, of actually feeling good about the thing that you're building, which I think is absolutely critical. So sorry, that was a bit of a ramble, but that's kind of how we got to where we got to.
It is, yeah. And I think for me that you've just really identified, you know, I think probably sort of six or seven, if not more, actually, if I was listening to this on catch up for a second or third time, I'd probably identify about 10 different things that you've kind of created there. It's almost like a checklist for how you do this. I'd like to just dive a little bit sort of more deeply into the how, because I kind of totally understand you very eloquently put the benefits of kind of doing this, and there's a lovely example, you know, which obviously is very, very close to home, and I guess you're very, very proud of it. Probably is your one of your big legacy things that you're going to leave the planet with, is that experience of, you know, creating that purpose-driven business. When it comes to the practicality of kind of rounding up the troops, if you're in a leadership role, or if you just have this burning desire, maybe you're in a more junior position, but you have this burning desire to make things better. Somebody a couple of years ago used the word wholesome to me, and I keep repeating that, and I keep hearing it and saying it. And I think it's just such a lovely word. If, you know, if somebody listening to this feels that I want my organization or my business to be more wholesome, literally in the whole definition of the word, to feel more whole, to feel more of a sort of a cohesive unit of people doing the same things for the right reasons. And yeah, just wholesome, just feels like the right thing to do. If they're not maybe the CEO or the founder, or maybe even at board level, if they're in a more kind of junior role, but they feel that passion, this isn't, and I would just want to come back to that point about the poster on the wall where you say with the dolphin fin and, you know, the lovely quotes and stuff. Yeah, I could picture that. And we've all seen it, I know. When it comes to kind of having those initial conversations, I mean, I know there is at the moment a big kind of drive towards empathy in business and, you know, sort of making decisions through love, not fear. And, you know, a lot of the kind of almost sort of spiritual traditions are coming into business now for a lot of the right reasons. But when it comes to kind of, yeah, having and broaching those conversations, if you're not the leader, where do you begin? I mean, how does that kind of materialize in reality?
Yeah, so if you're not the leader, clearly you're starting from a different place in terms of wanting to drive some of that change. And one thing I would say is everyone should be trying to drive for that change. But I also believe strongly that if you're in an organization where you genuinely believe that change can't happen, where those values aren't there, and you are a values-driven individual, don't hang around. Do go, you know, that there's a certain element of survival here that I alluded to earlier in terms of what's becoming more important for companies to survive. And essentially, if the company can't make values real, well, A, can't articulate them, and B, can't make them real, and isn't giving the opportunity, doesn't have the culture where the individuals can make that happen, then those individuals who care should go somewhere where they can make that happen. So I'm not. I start there just simply because we should try to make the change, and I'll go on to the kinds of things that people can do. But I think it's important for people to recognize that on some occasions, if the leadership just doesn't buy into it and won't buy into it, you might be able to create a microcosm around you, but you are going to be a minority floating in a ship that may not be heading that way. So just be clear about that. Now, if you do believe that you can drive change, and in reality, I think in most organizations, Yeah, change is possible. I'm an optimist. I believe most people are generally good people. I don't believe that we're mostly malevolent. I don't think, you know, I don't think companies are founded by people who are just thinking, let's, you know, create something that stinks here. You know, everybody kind of wants to have a good place to work. And so that gives us a route in, because you can use that to appeal to people's humanity. And so if I were in an organization that had that poster on the wall, but I saw behaviors that were out of sync with that with that poster, I would start to have the conversations, but start to have them in a, depending on the culture you're in a fairly non-confrontational manner. In a, you know, we say integrity, and I love that. You know, part of the reason I'm here is because I love that integrity is core to our organization, and that's one of the attractors here. And I'm just trying to understand in my mind how that translates to the things we do. So, you know, I noticed when we were dealing with such and such a client, we did this, which was great. But I also noticed when we did such and such with another client that I couldn't understand where the integrity was in that. And, you know, I'd love to have that conversation, because I, you know, I just want to understand what we mean by integrity when we say integrity. And I would start to have those conversations, at the very least in the groups that you're in, directly with immediate managers in a non-confrontational way, because, you know, as soon as we create an environment where people are getting defensive, we're unlikely to get to a productive outcome. But I would start to challenge and ask questions about how those values turn into the reality of the things that we actually do, where I've seen that they don't. And that's because, you know, I come back to it. If you're driving a program of turning your values into a culture, and I think that's actually the sequence of events. I think it's values that it eventually end up defining culture. You know, one of the core things you should be doing is saying, well, how does this particular value translate to this particular job or this particular role? And so if you're the person fulfilling that role, you can work that backwards and say, you know, this is the role that I'm fulfilling. You've told me these are our five core values. I think that translates to me doing these kinds of things in the way that I perform my role. Is that right or is that wrong? And let's start having that conversation. And so I think you can start from very much a role based between challenging and defining what the values mean in terms of the part of the organization that you sit in. You can start to have those conversations with your peers, with your immediate managers, and kickstart the conversation. Do it consistently enough, and you'll get to a place where it becomes a real conversation. And then you can, at that point, find out whether there is a genuine appetite or not. And if you're finding that those conversations are turning into a bit of a snowball, then at that point, you might want to try and say, well, shall we take a structured approach? Because it's clear we all want to do this, and how do we translate it into something real? If you're finding that it's constantly beating its head against the wall, then you may be in an organization where, you know, actually those values, there isn't the appetite to make those values real. And, you know, at that point, you have a choice to make. And the choice that you make will help that organization figure out for itself whether what kinds of people it wants to employ. So that essentially, if I was sat inside of an organization, I would start with the bubble that's directly around me and go from there out. You know, there's so much in this that depends on context. You know, I'm always wary of giving sort of blanket answers because a lot depends on the context you're in. If you're in a relatively small organization rather than a large corporate, and you know the boss, the CEO, the founder, the whatever, then you can probably have more direct conversations and you don't need to just build from the bit around you. So a lot depends on the environment that you're in, but you're certainly not impotent. In terms of making the change or starting to provoke the change. And ultimately, as I say, if you can't provoke the change, go somewhere where the change is wanted or where those behaviors are already there, because God knows we need people with values working in organizations that are positive, that are driving forward.
I think anybody attracted to this conversation is probably going to be exactly one of those people. So, I mean, yes, it's just described that everybody really has a part to play here. And you can, no matter where you are in the organization, senior, junior, wherever, if you're positively questioning, and I love that that kind of phrasing that you use there, positively question, because it's not going to inspire conflict. It might be slightly defensive, the response you get, just because of the nature of the beast. You kind of get there and you think, oh, actually, we're in this conversation now, and now I can see why nobody's ever brought this up before, because it's a little bit awkward. But at least if it's positive questioning, then it isn't something that will feel offensive to the other parties. So lovely advice. That's really, really practical. Do you see, when you talk about the kind of the size of the organization, do you see difference with the orientation of the organization coming up with differences? So if it's a very kind of product driven organization, is that different to, say, a sales focused organization? If it's like in marketing speak, a market driven organization, do you see differences in kind of how that sort of scalability or having those conversations differs? Do you see a pattern there at all?
There are patterns. I like to distinguish between a pattern and a stereotype, because it's very easy to stereotype, and very easy when we're talking about patterns to turn that into a stereotype of, what does a sales-driven organization look like? And I go to sales straight away, because that's probably the one where the stereotype is strongest. I'm just going to sell. Damned be the consequences. I just want to make my number. The reality is different types of companies do have a tendency towards having different types of cultures. It was interesting after I worked on the turnaround. We eventually IPO'd, and then we got acquired by a very large corporate. And it didn't, I won't go into the details, but it didn't end in a great place. And it didn't end in a great place for me primarily because there was a mismatch of values. I don't think they had bad values. I think they were just different values. And that came because they were, in my view, it came fundamentally because they were a product-focused company. And we were a people and services focused company. We were a consultancy. They were a product company that had, hardware and increasingly a software offering. Now, does that mean that, their values were rotten because they're a product? No, they weren't at all. Their values reflected the kind of business that they were in, and ours reflected the one that we're in. Now, that said, I think there are also some commonalities that are more important to look at than the differences. And by that, I mean, essentially, and I come back to values. We've not really touched on purpose yet. But when I come back to values, there are certain things that should be the case, whatever organization you work in. The value of mutual respect, that's core. That's core. If I can't respect the people that I'm working with, it doesn't matter whether I'm in a sales-driven organization, a product organization, a professional services organization, I'm creating something that's relatively toxic. So there are some core values, some core behaviors, some core moral or ethical codes that I think are and should be consistent across organizations. Now, from there, you can go to a place that says, okay, well, if we have some code of conduct, some code of moral behavior, some code of ethics that we all need to subscribe to, and those are relatively transferable across companies, we can then go to the next level up, which is the values one, which is, what are the core values, i.e. the subset of those ethics that the company holds dear? And there you're going to get something that's quite different. Because there you could be somewhere where actually it's about, innovation is a core value of ours. We like to go and work with people and identify more innovative ways for them to have a greater impact. And so innovation is a core value of ours. Or I may be a company where actually it's about making sure that, you know, people who buy my product, buy my service, have security, have safety, have reliability. Maybe in that instance, innovation is not so much the thing, but safety or security are more of values that we adhere to. Predictability. We like to have a core value that our customers, you know what to expect, are protected, you know, if you're an insurance, possibly, rather than one where we're constantly helping them to define new boundaries. And so, you know, in as much as values are a subset for me of your ethical code of conduct, your ethics probably are not going to change massively between organizations. They may change between cultures, and in no pejorative sense, meaning, you know, an English company and a Chinese company may have quite different codes of ethics based on ethical norms in those countries. And again, I'm not saying that in a pejorative sense that the English one is better or the Chinese. They're just the norms that represent those cultures. But the core values, and as much as a company should, you know, if I say these are my 27 core values, I've probably misunderstood the meaning of the word core. I'm probably looking at it and saying, you know, these are all good behaviors. These are all good things that we should be doing. But there's four of them that come to the fore, and those really are the core values of the organization. And that will vary depending on the industry that you're in and the kind of company that you're trying to build. So that's where I think the variability comes in. But it is important for me that at the baseline, there is a common set of ethics, which is broader than our values, that we subscribe to as an organization and you know, that we hold dear. I don't know if that's answered your question. That was a fairly long rambling answer there.
No, I think it does. And I think the more you kind of talk in that way, the more I'm sort of feeling that these are the values that are really underpinning the journey of purpose. I know you kind of initially we were saying, hey, we're going to talk about purpose here, but and the conversation, as inevitably it does, goes off at a different sort of angle for all the right reasons. And I'm a great believer in just letting this conversation flow, because we're going to be talking about the right things. So it's, maybe it is more about really understanding those values to make sure at an individual level you're in the right place to then be able to identify, okay, well, actually, what is collectively our purpose here? Because it's almost that if you're not surrounding yourself with people of similar values, I mean, how can you work to a purpose? How can you be purpose driven in every moment and every day? So, I mean, do you see those two things really linked? And should we really start with values? Because it's very easy to just think, oh, it's all about the purpose. Right, guys, let's rally around and we're going to drive forward like this. But then without those values in place, it's just you're on a hiding to nothing, aren't you? So is values, do you think, irrespective of purpose, values is really where you need to begin to align yourself with like-minded others in lots of ways?
So it's again, it's one which, you know, leads you to want to give a blanket answer, but there isn't a blanket answer. I think values are essential. I keep going back to values because I think it's very hard to get anywhere if you haven't, or it's very hard to get to a good place if you haven't got clarity on your values. But I do think you very, very quickly need to get onto purpose, because, you know, if we've all got great values and I'm writing books and you're building sheds, you know, we are at cross purposes. You know, we don't belong in the same in the same organization. So I think, you know, for me, purpose is about direction. Where are we heading as an organization? And values are about execution, about how are we as an organization? We need both. In reality, we do need both. The thing about purpose is, I find purpose evolves and continues to evolve within organizations for good reasons, because, you know, the world evolves and changes, and the needs that we need to serve change. But purpose does give me more the guiding direction of where we want to go. Purpose is incredibly empowering. Purpose allows clarity of purpose allows my team to decide, to be more empowered to make the decisions with regards to what they do in their work. Values allow them to know how to do that, and clear values create that expectation in terms of what they can expect of others as they do the work that they do. So I would probably if I were to look at where do I go first, I actually would probably have a loose idea around purpose first, actually. What are we trying to serve at a high level? And then very quickly dive into my values and then come back and can re-clarify my purpose in terms of, yeah, in a more defined way, what is it that we're actually doing here? But it's iterative. We will go from one to the other because we both need to know where we're going and how we behave as an organization in terms of getting there. And so, you know, I really don't think it's an either or. And also where would I start really depends on where the organization is already. If it's got clarity of purpose, let's not start there. Let's figure out how more clearly what our values are. If we've got a lot of values but it feels like a bit of a headless chicken, we need to look at purpose. You know, it's not a one size fits all answer. It really isn't.
But it's so clear, I think, to a lot of us, you know, sort of grappling with this. Where do I begin? How do I actually take this forward? I've got the desire, motivation to do it. I need to know. And that lovely kind of circle where actually the two things are interlinked. They're in this lovely loop. That's just beautifully put. And I can see it in my head now. I think I'm going to create a visual to go with this description below this, you know, the introduction to this particular episode. So that was beautifully put here. It's really, really good.
Yeah, And thank you. I think if there's one thing for me, I would keep coming back to context. We lose one of the challenges that social media and 140 characters has taken us to, and in fact journalism with if it bleeds it leads in the headline, is we've lost sight of nuance. And I think where a lot of organizations go wrong is because, you know, they've read a book and the book says start with why, and so they've just gone, let's do why. Well, you can't serve your why unless you've figured out how. And it's interesting with that one, you know, clearly I think a lot of people more people read the title than read the book, because if you read the book, there's an awful lot about how in there. But people go for the why, and let's just focus on the why. And it's like, yeah, we need, but very quickly we need to go from why to how. Otherwise the why is irrelevant. Because we're not doing anything. We're just saying, yeah, the world could look like this and that's fantastic. And we can all be agreeing with each other until the cows come home, until we've started to figure out the how. And so those headlines get us to a place where we lose sight of nuance and context. And so, you know, if you're working in an organization that already exists, I would have to look at the context and the nuance to decide where you go first. If you're founding an organization or a CEO, then you've got more leeway to define where you go first. And so, you know, that for me is ultimately how you get to whether I do purpose or whether I do values. In either way, you need to get to both of them. It's just a question of where you go first.
Wow, there's the summary. Beautifully put. It's almost like you've done this before, yes. If somebody wants to carry on the conversation with you, how do they get in contact? What's the best way?
So the best way is to find me on LinkedIn. I presume the spelling of my name will be in the show notes. There's only one of me on LinkedIn, yes, which is a blessing and a curse. And also the organization I lead, it's called Beyond the Quarter. So you can find me on beyondthequarter.com as well.
Thank you so much for your time and wisdom today. Yes, I'm sure we've all benefited. I certainly know I have. So thank you for your expertise and the clarity of how you've described it. Very much appreciated.
Thank you very much for having me, Neil. I hope it's been of some benefit to someone.